It appears to be 3 o'clock. So I guess we want to start the meditation. Doing something a little experimental today. I'm not going to give you one subject of meditation. I'm going to give you 12. We're going to do it sequentially. These are the 12 links of what we call dependent origination. It's the, I don't know, those of you who know about it don't need it explained, but those who don't, who aren't aware of it, it's the 12 links the Buddha discovered on the night of his enlightenment, which are kind of the dominant paradigm of how life works. It's not a theory of how the universe began, not that it had a beginning, but it addresses itself to suffering and the ending of suffering, but it gives a logical and unfortunately rather linear sequence to how this all works. But I'm going to give it to you one step at a time. We'll spend 5 minutes on each one. And if during this sequence, I mean, they run to subjects like suffering, the arising of nama-rupa, which is the body, ignorance, let's see, what else? Contact and feeling, et cetera, craving. Anyway, there'll be 5 minutes on each one of these. And we'll contemplate each one sequentially, but if you get one that I describe briefly and it catches your imagination, stay with that and ignore what I say subsequent to that. It's, as I say, it's an experiment. I haven't done it before, so we'll, I don't know how it's going to work, it may be a little bit too brisk for some of you, but we won't know until we try. So we've got quite a few latecomers coming, so I'll probably have to explain this again. Wait till everybody comes in. Well, we've got an hour, which means 5 minutes for each one. And as I say, if you encounter one that grabs you, stay with that and focus your mind on nothing but that one subject. But this also, as I say, this gives you plenty of options. You get 12 choices. So firstly, just get comfortable. And that means sitting all whatever way you like. There's nothing, we're not a Zen group. We're not trying to tough it out. You can't do any comforting of the mind without comforting the body first. So I'll read what the Buddha actually said about it in brief. Just as monks, when rain descends heavily upon some mountaintop, the water flows down along the slope and fills the clefts, gullies, and creeks. These being filled up the pools. These being filled, fill up the ponds. These being filled, fill up the streams. These being filled, fill up the rivers, and the rivers being filled, fill up the great ocean. In the same way, monks, ignorance is the supporting condition for karma formations. I'll explain these as I go along. As I tackle each one of the 12, I'll give a very brief explanation of it. Karma formations are the supporting condition for consciousness. This all has to do with something called dependent arising, and it has to do with the fact that everything that we do comes as a result of previous conditions, and this essentially is taking that as a paradigm for how life works. Consciousness is the supporting condition for mentality, materiality. Mentality, materiality is the supporting condition for the sixfold sense base. The sixfold sense base is the supporting condition for contact. Contact is the supporting condition for feeling. Feeling is the supporting condition for craving. Craving is the supporting condition for clinging. Clinging is the supporting condition for existence. Existence is the supporting condition for birth, and birth is the supporting condition for suffering. One at a time, we'll start with ignorance, which is, unfortunately, as I say, this is rather linear, but the thing is that ignorance, along with a couple of others, is a continuum throughout this whole cycle of 12. Ignorance is always there until you end ignorance with the ending of suffering. So we'll take it one at a time, but anyway, try and focus on why you're here, what the purpose is of, and I don't mean in this meditation class, but I mean on earth, in your current existence. Why? What is it? What is this? The Zen monks in Korea have something called umutgo, which means, what is this? That's the ignorance we possess, all of us. We don't know until we become fairly highly evolved. We don't know. The ignorance we have covers everything. So focus on what you don't know. Find something that is a mystery to you, and give your minds for 5 minutes to just that particular thing. I mean, all of us will have something different, but focus on your own lack of understanding of something. So we'll give it five and start with that. Breathing deeply and initially, and then let it become gentle. What is the greatest mystery for you? What is it that puzzles you most? With ignorance's condition, birth comes to be. We are born in ignorance. There's no being that is, well, that's not true. I was going to say more ignorant than a baby, but because we're all equally ignorant. That's the original neophyte, the baby. Imagine yourselves in that state. Imagine being born. You're nurtured in a warm, secure, moist environment, and all of a sudden you're thrust out into the world, which is dominated by a mystery. I might add that by the definition used in the sutta, if it weren't for ignorance, we wouldn't be born. We wouldn't be reborn. I mean, every birth is a rebirth. So, but for the fact of ignorance, there would not be rebirth. Except for the workings of karma, you could say that as we are born, we are born into a state of like a psychophysical vacuum that we tend to try and begin to fill as soon as we emerge. Now we are out there in the world. The lucky ones of us continue to be nurtured, but what begins now is something called the formation of karma formations, which are those things that drive us, emotions and what little thinking we can do that's logical. Willing. Beginnings of cognition, but they're called karma formations, and that's they depend upon birth to come into existence. So put yourself in a position of beginning to be able to decide things for yourself. As a child, it's often difficult because we're in a powerless position, but we keep asserting these attempts at autonomy. Principle among the karma formations is the will. So put yourself back to when that just is beginning. we are physically dependent at that stage, but we're just beginning to attempt to become already psychologically independent and autonomous, striving to be someone. Many of us are still doing that. Most of us, I would say. And the next link in this chain of causation is consciousness. Now, to be quite wiser minds than mine and put it in this order, but I feel consciousness should precede karma formations. But as I say, I'm subject to limited understanding, so we will leave it as the Buddha said. And consciousness is next. It could be viewed that it requires will for consciousness to come into being. In other words, will is almost... No, I'm sorry, I have difficulty with that. So just take it as given that consciousness is the next step. See what it's like to develop a consciousness. In another element of the Buddha's teachings, consciousness and descends into the womb of a woman in season, and aligns with the what's called the nama rupa, which is mentality, materiality, and that forms a being. But try and just take back to pure consciousness, which is not a bad subject for an hour's meditation, actually, on its own. Consciousness, what does that cover? What are its limitations? What puzzles you about it?
actually doing right now is attempting to alter our state of consciousness. Many of us have tried it before chemically, but we're doing this in a more disciplined fashion. Can we actually alter our consciousness? The next link in this chain is something called mentality-materiality, otherwise known as name and form or nama-rupa. Now, I misstated before that the consciousness descends into the womb of a woman in season, and I said it aligns with nama-rupa, but it doesn't. It aligns with a fertilized ovum, and from that is born nama-rupa, which is the psychophysical organism. So you're no longer a psychophysical vacuum, as you were when you first emerged. You're a complete being. Which blends with the next link, which I'm going to combine with this one, called the sixfold sense base, which are the six senses of touch, taste, smell, hearing. Anyway, there's six of them we've got. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, taste, body, and mind. Tactile sensations. There's six of them, and they form almost at the same time. They comprise and are the subsequent condition. So contemplate your body now. Imagine how it must have formed. And get in touch with each of the sense bases. With your eyes closed, it's a bit difficult to get sight, but you can imagine it. You are now more or less a complete being, bar the overarching ethos of ignorance. You're a completely ignorant being. But you have talent. You have capacity. You have potential. Of what is this miraculous contrivance capable? now that we have these six sense bases fully functional, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, touch, and mind, what is it we do with them? And the next link is called contact, pasa, in Pali. Pick a sense base that's your favorite and focus on that. What's it like to touch? What's it like to hear? Not the mechanics of it, not how it works, but what is it like? Many, if not all, of these senses are yet to be explained fully by science. But you can come close by keeping your mind focused on any or all of them. But best to pick one. I'll just add a footnote here, but the first five, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, all comprise rupa, or materiality of that nama rupa that I mentioned before. The last one, consciousness, is the mentality of it. The first five are physical senses, and the last one is a mental sense. And just incidentally, when you go into relatively deep states of meditation, the point is not only are you overcoming the five hindrances, you're trying to get beyond the five sense, physical sense bases. That's the mark for me, anyway. And the function of these six sense bases is one thing, and that's called yeah, called contact, pasa. It's what we do with these senses. We come in contact with the world. So take these senses that we have, that each of us has, and watch its function. It's the beginning of reaching out. And despite what we may think, it isn't the things out there that come and seduce us. We reach out for them because it helps occupy us. It's what we identify with. What form of contact has the most power over you? And it's at this link that the analysis of addiction can be addressed. Whether it's addiction to shopping or heroin, it's a reaching out. We feel fulfilled by our contacts. But at the same time, we can be enslaved by them, because contact leads to the next link, which is feeling, vedana. And vedana can be good, bad, or indifferent. So find your contact that you are most familiar with, that to a feeling. whether that feeling engenders attraction or aversion, we still end up employing the next link or discovering the next link, which is clinging. If it's a pleasant feeling, we cling to it because it's good, it's satisfying, it's fulfilling. But even if it's bad, not, we cling to that too because it's familiar. Any heroin addict will tell you that. Alcoholic, shopaholic. I remember a story of a woman who developed eczema at the age of 14, and it was horrific. Her whole body was covered in. I haven't seen eczema, but apparently it's a skin disease that's pretty bad. She had it till she was 35, and they at some point found a cure. Within a matter of months, she was cured. She grieved for 3 months after that because she lost this unpleasant, thoroughly unpleasant, but very familiar feeling. We all know about how victims cling to their victimhood. Not wholesome, not pleasant, but it's familiar. What is it you cling to? Try and find the dynamic. Not just identifying it, but find the dynamic. You'll have to excuse me because I've reversed the order, clinging and craving. Craving should have been first, and clinging comes after. But craving, I see them so closely aligned that it probably doesn't hurt to take them in this other order. Craving is a wider subject. Clinging is specific. Craving is almost... not wanting something, but wanting to want. could be said with ignorance as the fuel, craving is the engine that drives us. Craving has been divided into three forms by the Buddha. Craving for sense objects, craving for existence, kama bhava, and craving for non-existence, vibhava tanha. And that's essentially not unlike the Freudian death wish. That resides in many of us. Depressives, junkies, just occasionally, just wishing to stop it all. But the combination of craving and clinging brings up the next link, which is existence. Which is one of those three forms of craving, bhava tanha. We want to be. And in the clinging to the habits and possessions that we have, harkens back to one of the last French existentialist thinkers who said, to be is to have. We define ourselves by what we have, not by what we are. And it isn't just cars and iPads, it's those things that without which we'd feel empty. And this desire for existence is what brings about rebirth. with each birth. Each birth gives rise to, eventually, old age, sickness, and death. Always with this overriding almost universal ignorance. What is this? Imut go. What is this? And the cycle begins again. But given what we're all doing now, and what hopefully you do at home, in the privacy and personal space of your choosing, and through an attempt at a penetrative understanding of what this is all about, we try and put the brakes on what seems an inevitable process. I've made such a hash of the order of these things, there's probably a lot of questions, so I'll leave a couple of minutes for those. Otherwise, we get a few minutes just to sit quietly. Welcome to the world. Sure. Where are we? Yes. Hmm. The great teachers all say, just observe it. I do it another way. I tend to, let's see, how would I deal with it? It doesn't happen too much to me anymore, as a matter of fact, because so little bothers me. But back in the old days, when I was young and totally untutored, I tended to just busy myself to death, and I'd find something else to distract me. But sometimes those things that you don't want to think about, once again, it's your responsibility. You're the one that's paying attention to it. You must remember that. It's not that thing out there that's the problem. It's the fact that you choose to attend to it. So it's a question of working on your sati, your mindfulness. It's just a question of recognizing that it's your responsibility of what you think about and your responsibility for how you feel about it. Essentially, it all lies in here, and you actually can't do it from here. Unfortunately, as Westerners, we're hardwired to do most of our work up here. You talk to most Asians, and they use the word chit-chai, which is essentially mind-heart, and you ask them where it is, and they point here. We're up here, and we analyze to death, and we doubt, and we question. So it's not an easy thing for us to do the kind of thing you're after. You just can't do it because your teacher says so. But given the fact that you're an autonomous being, you're totally autonomous, you've got to make the decision, this troubles me enough, I'm simply not going to attend to it. And I mean, it happens to me. I walk around the park 20 or 30 times in the morning, and they have the sprinklers on, and it irritates me. I mean, I've got to dodge all the water as I'm walking around the thing, and then I finally realize all I have to do is walk in the road. And it solves the problem. So sometimes it's easy, but other times, if it's really deep-seated, it's not easy. And none of this stuff, when you're actually making decisions about things that are really painful, I won't say it's impossible, but it's bloody hard work. I'm seeing a lady in a hospital, and she's in the throes of going through a heart-lung transplant. And that's a big deal. And she's asking me the same question. How do I put this out of my mind? And I say, well, good question. I don't know. I doubt if I'd be able to. And the only reason I'm in the equanimous state that I'm in is because I've been 15 years doing this, and I'd nothing out there bothers me anymore because I got no business thinking about it, except for the occasional sprinklers outside, and then I overcome that pretty quickly. So good luck. I mean, all I can say is just attend, recognize what you're attending to, and recognize that it's voluntary. Yes. Sorry, I'm deaf as opposed to. I'm. It might be a good idea.
I didn't hear your response to the gentleman or the lady about. But the lady just told me here. The word you said was it's all interior. I didn't hear what you said.
Boy, I still haven't got that. Oh. You want to come up?
Do I want to come up?
We can talk personally if you want, and then I can hear you. It's up to you. And that's the trouble with being 75. Nothing, none of my senses work. All right. Oh, yeah, indeed. I mean, outside is just, it's just the world impinging on us, and we can choose not to pay attention to it, but it's a lot of work not doing that because we've spent our whole lives. Out here is all there is. We don't recognize the fact that this is where 99% of what really matters exists, and that's what you have to listen to. But it's really, really, it's tough. It's not an easy thing to do. I admire all you people doing this because I could never have done it as a lay person. I mean, I wouldn't have bothered. It just was too much trouble. But I'm in a lucky position. So It's the most difficult thing in the world to do. The Buddha said you can defeat an army of 1,000, but to defeat your own